Hello, I'm Dr. Scott Wattier.
And I'm Tommy Welling, and you're listening to the Fasting for Life podcast.
This podcast is about using fasting as a tool to regain your health, achieve ultimate wellness, and live the life you truly deserve.
Each episode is a short conversation on a single topic with immediate actionable steps. We cover everything from fat loss and health and wellness to the science of lifestyle design.
We started Fasting for Life because of how fasting has transformed our lives, and we hope to share the tools that we have learned along the way. Hey everyone, welcome to the Fasting for Life podcast. My name is Dr. Scott Wattier, and I'm here as always with my good friend and colleague, Tommy Welling. Good afternoon to you, sir.
Hey Scott, how are you?
Doing fantastic, my friend. Excited for today's conversation. We're going to talk about fasting. Go figure. Yeah. We're going to talk about diabetes and fasting studies. Is it useful or harmful? Pretty much believe you know where we're going to land if you've been listening to us for a while now, that yes, we absolutely believe that you need to fast to reverse your diabetes. And we're also going to talk about a study on the effects of low-carb dietary intervention on hemoglobin A1C, which is one of the industry standard markers for blood sugar disorders. And we'll talk a little bit about how that's a downstream effect and something that can kind of lurk beneath the surface. But we're going to encourage you to take one thing away from today's episode. As we like to say, we're going to have a singular conversation with an actionable step for you to continue to be able to put fasting into your day-to-day life, Tommy. So welcome in. If you're a new listener, we're happy to have you with us. If you want to learn more about who we are and why we do what we do, head back to episode one, give it a listen. Excuse me, with a little bit of grace as well as I cough into the microphone, is that first episode, we're sharing our story for the first time, but our mission is to empower each and every person that has weight loss struggles, that hasn't been able to figure out a way to get the weight off and keep it off to improve long-term health. Fasting gave us our lives back, and we want to share our story and our journey with you along the way. If you're an OG, appreciate you listening in. If you're a Fasting for Life lifer, thank you. I appreciate all of the incredible five-star reviews lately. Those are our favorite kind, of course.
Love
we take criticism too. Probably my bad jokes and the coughing into the microphone, but I think we can move forward, right? So we're excited to have
Let me give a shout out for a five-star review
that
I just saw come through.
Ooh, pivot. All right. I like it.
Amba says, so thankful. I was completely new to fasting and so thankful I found this podcast. I'm now on day number 12 of fasting. Congrats. 16-8. I will continue to push to hit a 24 as my goal. Then I want to do one meal a day. Oh, man. And I can't tell you how much better I feel. And I am just so pumped. Yay, accountability. And I'm so excited to see where this goes. That's awesome, Amba. Congrats. And keep pushing. Keep leaning into doing more of what's working for you right now.
Yeah, and that's actually perfect timing as we had just released the new blueprint to fasting for fat loss. And it's a resource that's going to accelerate and give you some examples on how to ramp up into getting to that OMAD. So it's a perfect, I didn't know you're going to do that, Tommy. It's perfect. Cool. So if you haven't gotten the new blueprint, head to the show notes, click the link. It'll ask you to put in your name, your email. Don't worry, we're not going to spam you. We're going to zoom it across the interwebs.
Yeah.
It'll end up in your inbox. It'll be a resource, a PDF that you will be able to have and work through in being able to put fasting into and turn fasting from a diet into a lifestyle, because so many of us do come to fasting to lose weight and get healthy. So with that, let's talk about some of the research that came out this past year in 2022, one from the beginning of the year in January, and then one from later in the year in October. And the cool thing is that fasting, you know, it's been around since the dawn of time, right? The fasting cure in 1911, you know, we used to go with periods without food forever, and it used to be called like winter. Right. And now it's called you're starving yourself. Why aren't you eating every 3 hours? But you can go back and, you know, look
how the perspective changes.
Right. It's in so many religious practices. One of the ones that's studied often is Ramadan.
Yep.
And that is mentioned in one of the first studies that we're going to mention today as well. But the takeaway should be, well, what's the application? What's the health benefit? What can it do for me? Right. So, especially in the prevention of metabolic disease like diabetes and then comorbidities like metabolic syndrome, which is blood pressure, triglycerides, all of those things, as well as cardiometabolic issues. And we've done episodes on all things related to those in the episode on, you know, how 8 of the top 10 reasons why people lose their life or their life is shortened here in the United States is related to blood sugar dysregulation or insulin. So we're talking about lifestyle diseases and lifestyle prevention. But the problem is that the system we have is very symptom-based. So we're going to talk about the A1C today and how it is a industry standard test. But we're also going to show that the results from the study move the needle on the gold standard of insulin resistance, which is the upstream, like the iceberg above the surface, the festering, slowly growing, all of a sudden my labs are out of whack and my doctor wants to put me on medication 20 years later when the problem's been there. We just haven't been able to identify it. So
Couldn't see it,
right? So we're just not looking in the right place. So the first study came out of the Turkish Journal of Medical Sciences, and it's evidence-based information about intermittent fasting in diabetes patients, useful or harmful. And funny that the main takeaway from this is we need more fasting. Right. And their takeaway was that they go through all different rigmaroles of things that they looked at. And I'll give you a little bit of perspective here on the calorie restriction or what they called fasting regimens that they looked at. But the reality was that, hey, we need more research. Right. And if you've been anyone that struggled with blood sugar and you go to the American Diabetes Association or any of the associations across the world, you will see that dietary change is one. But then when you get to a certain point, there's medication management. And the reality is that the medication isn't going to reverse the disease process. It's going to slowly manage it. But most times, those things continue to increase over time, just like my dad's story, more medications, more insulin, different types of insulin, administering it multiple times throughout the day as a type 2 diabetic, not type 1. We're talking type 2 here. So it's like, okay, well, we know we're not metabolically healthy. Only 12% of the population is. Some studies show as low as 8. We know that only 5% of people lose the weight and keep it off, right, and maintain a healthy. We know the numbers are increasing in all of those disease processes that we mentioned. It's like, all right, hey, this study's great. Let's look at fasting and whether or not it can reverse diabetes. Well, we know that fasting can improve 10 times over insulin and blood sugar and blood pressure and cholesterol numbers and all of those studies that we've talked about over the last few years, and the ones that are, there's more now coming out than ever before, which is super exciting. But this one was kind of lackluster in their definition on page 4 of the study of like their types of fasting that they studied. And their takeaway was, well, we need more research. I'm like, yeah, but what you looked at really wasn't fasting when it comes to fast. Skipping a meal is not fasting.
Yeah.
Skipping a meal is, oh, my flight was late and I didn't have time to stop at the, you know, the airport kiosk to get a sandwich.
Yeah. But don't worry, I made up for it later.
Yeah, right? When I landed, went to the Brazilian steakhouse. Full.
Right. Right. Or I grabbed some additional snacks, you know? And like, I think the perspective that was helpful for me towards the beginning of my fasting journey that I wish I had a little bit sooner was just the fact that, you know, these are both blood sugar related issues and blood sugar related studies. And what I think is really important to remember is the fact that the difference between non-diabetic and non-pre-diabetic and diabetic, as far as the A1C goes, is less than 1% on the numbers that we typically use, right? Like going from 5.7 to 6.4 or above 6.5. So I think it's just important to remember that even if I have, let's say, only, quote unquote, 20 pounds that I need to lose, on average, my blood sugar is higher than it should be. It's higher than my body can really handle at that moment, because it keeps trying to push out a little more and a little more insulin to get the blood sugar lower. But the thing is that doesn't allow it to tap into fat stores that I actually have. So on average, I'm accumulating over time, you know? So it doesn't matter if I don't have diabetes or I don't feel like I'm on the path to diabetes. All of this stuff is still relevant, even if I just have a few pounds to lose, right?
Yeah. So you just mentioned something that they mentioned in the first study, and they identify it in the animal studies as the metabolic switch, right? Mm-hmm. So it's the activation of many pathways that occur when you fast or you delay food, right? And you allow insulin to come down. So they look at it, they say that it's thought that these mechanisms of action are also valid in humans. And we do have some studies that show that due to low blood glucose levels during fasting periods, less insulin secretion occurs compared to other times, right? So we want, no food's coming in. Our body's going to flip that switch. And that's why we're going to be able to see the effects that we will on insulin and markers like A1C. So the thing with the first study is looking at their fasting windows, and then the A1C study actually gives us some hope. But the fasting regimens that they looked at were, you know, fasting 14 to 18 hours, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's more intermittent fasting, and it's really just skipping breakfast, sure. Right? So
deliberately.
Yeah. Deliberately, intentionally.
Consistently.
Delaying, right? Yeah. Not denying, right? Consistently, yeah. Yeah. And yeah. Then there was a 16-hour fast, again, falling in the same thing with two meals, like a two-MAD scenario. So mm-hmm. I'll give it mild fasting. And then a one-day-a-week fast. So 1 day a week, you water only fast for 1 day. And then the rest of the week is normal consumption. So that's not really
yeah.
fasting.
Yeah.
That's, you know, I don't know, you could be sick for a day and not eat, right? So. Right. Then you've got Ramadan fasting, which is typically be 11 to 18 hours, right? So 18 hours, you're getting into that, you know, autophagy starting to turn on, insulin starting mm-hmm. to come down, but you're right on the cusp. And then the IER regimens, they did alternate day fasting, right? So mm-hmm. you can eat whatever you want ad libitum on the feasting days. And then on fasting days, you can actually have up to 25%, 500 or 600 calories. So mm-hmm. there's some good fasting there. Lots of slippage. We did a whole episode on ADF, multiple episodes.
Yeah.
That there's a lot of room for error with ADF, sure. and that's why they have a modified ADF as well, but beneficial. Then the 5-2 diet, which is twice a week, you have fasting days. They don't have to be consecutive or fast cycling, like stacking those fasts to get the greatest metabolic benefit and insulin decrease.
Yeah.
So tiny bit of fasting in that one. And then a combination of intermittent fasting and caloric restriction, which is really just sending mixed signals, because you'll have elevated periods of insulin and like snacking and multiple meals.
Yeah.
And then not enough time.
Low calorie, high insulin.
Yeah. Low calorie, elevated insulin. Exactly. Yeah. So that's mixed messages. They actually label it variable. And then intermittent, very low carb, which is 1 day a week, kind of a modified carb cycling type approach, which for us, mm-hmm. carb cycling is something, you know, performance based, body composition based, and really complicated for a lot of folks, but yeah. can be done where you just rotate the amount of carbs that you have on certain days of the week. So the takeaway is it's necessary to show which IF regimen is safe and effective and for how long for diabetic patients, right? So if you're on medication, then yes, you need to let your doctor know, like, hey, I want to start fasting. This is what I'm doing. They need to be supportive, because there are certain medications, like if you're forcing your blood sugar low with medication, then you need to be aware and be able to track that with either a CGM or a finger stick, right? There is no major concern for the ketoacidosis side, which is the fear piece, because that really typically only happens in type 1 diabetics and also in weird insulinomas, tumor type situations. So fasting is safe for diabetics. You just need to be monitoring your blood sugar, right?
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about the fun study, right? The one that does show that fasting or that low carb or lifestyle intervention, right? I.e. fasting, can lower your A1C numbers in 3 or 6 months. We're not talking 3 to 6 years, but 3 to 6 months, Tommy. And that's where I love where you set the stage with, you know, under 5.7, 5.7 to 6.4, which is pre-diabetes, and then 6.5 and above, which is diabetes.
Yeah, because when we're talking about A1C, it's good to note like where that comes from and what it actually means. So you're looking at, you know, between 60 to 90 days for the average hemoglobin molecule that's actually transporting oxygen through the bloodstream. And so it's really important, because it doesn't take a big difference there to go from 5.7%, you know, sugar saturation on these molecules to get up to, you know, in the sixes. And then, you know, you start to creep towards the diabetes, you know, diagnosis, but that's not a whole lot of room for error if you think about it. But the cool thing is that those molecules basically last for about 60 to 90 days. So that's what it's a look back. It's a lagging indicator, if you will, for what's been happening physiologically. So to see that we can start to move the needle, and we see some promising results here over just a few months, and then start to put that together with dialing up our fasting a bit more, like you were talking about in the previous study where some of those methods weren't quite
on
getting to where, yeah, oh
on
man,
the cusp of flipping the switch.
Yeah, it's really close. But if we can put those things together, now we can see some really just incredible results that you may be like, like knocking out the door, you know?
Yeah. The cool thing about this study was they were looking at the 3 and 6 month marks, right? And it was a randomized clinical trial, 150 adults, low carb diet intervention. So less than 40 net carbs a day. And there was a significant reduced hemoglobin A1C compared with the usual diet over 6 months.
Nice.
So a direct finding, Tommy, you did the math, right? So if you want to share that, of what that delta is and then what that change is and how close it can be from getting you from one category to the next in just 6 months.
Yeah. So it was basically going over the 6 months, you reached about a 0.23% reduction in the A1C. So taking it from on average about a 6.17 down to a 5.94. So depending on exactly, you know, where you fall, that can be enough to move the needle. That could be enough to get off of a medication or reduce one potentially, or to see a new number on the scale potentially. Because if you can get that number down, then that means insulin can follow that on average, it can come down a bit more, which means that I can spend more time tapping into those long-term fat stores rather than just, you know, burning through more sugar than I'm bringing in. That won't come out.
Yeah, 100%. This is why we focus on like knowing your numbers, right? So the cool thing about this study and the importance of it that they were really pushing into was that low-carb diets decrease A1C among patients with type 2 at least as much as low-fat diets. We just did an episode on low-fat versus low-carb, right?
Yeah.
Which is really interesting. However, we do say so ourselves. However, evidence on the effects of low-carb diets on A1C, because low-carb is so popular, like, is it beneficial? Is it going to be the long-term solution for you, right?
Yeah.
Is that the solution, right? Well, some of the studies show that long-term low-carb restriction in diabetics at the two-year mark isn't as beneficial. But we're talking 6 months, smaller sample size, keto, 90 days.
What's the result? Easier to stick to over 6 months.
Yeah, easier to stick to. Incredible. Trying new things, figuring out, hey, is this my long-term solution to get you off the dieting weight loss roller coaster, right? Get you off the struggle bus. So the cool thing about this study was they were focusing on the range of pre-diabetes to diabetes. They were focusing on the pre-diabetes group because in the diabetes group treated with medication, the A1C has been documented to show results. So I love the fact that we're talking about not the 40 million Americans that have type 2 diabetes, but the fact that the statistics right now from the CDC, the most updated ones, is 96 million Americans, more than one in three have pre-diabetes.
Wow.
Here's the staggering statistic. 80% don't know it.
Yeah, I believe it. I didn't.
I didn't either.
Yeah.
Woo. But my liver enzymes were up a little bit. My blood pressure was kind of elevated a little bit. My waist circumference was increasing.
HDL ratio getting off.
Yeah, the ratio was off a little bit.
Yeah.
Right. So fasting, obviously shown to over periods of time to decrease so many health benefits. It's incredible. Yeah. But lab metrics for sure. To show those positive net effects. So when we're looking at this study specifically versus the control group, you had mentioned that reduction in A1C. And then we also look at fasting plasma glucose and the low carb intervention group. Imagine if we added fasting, just like the first study, right? We need a little more fasting. What do you need? More fasting. How do you get there? Go grab the blueprint. It walks you through exactly what your week should look like and how to get there. So shameless plug. It's a free resource. Here you go. Yeah. You got it. So we just realized that there was a gap that needed to be filled and we're really excited with the feedback so far as well. Yes. So fasting plasma glucose at the baseline 3 month and 6 month mark steadily decreased, right? So just shy of 110 to just over 105 to just shy of 100, right?
Wow,
so a big change, right? But the usual diet group actually went up at 3 months and then back down, but not down to the original starting point as baseline at the 6 month mark.
Ouch.
So it's like a mountain peak, right? I was like, oh, weird. Yeah. Systolic blood pressure, both groups declined, but significantly at the 3 month mark from baseline to 3 month mark in the low carb group. And then total cholesterol decreased both, but at the 6 month mark, it veered away from the usual diet group as well. And then the weight stayed almost identical, right, Tommy? The number on this one's pretty cool. Almost identical at the baseline group, at the usual diet group from baseline to 3 month to 6 month. But there was a huge drop from, and this can happen with carbohydrates and the water that, you know, 1 gram of carbs, 3 grams of water, the whoosh effect.
Yeah.
From baseline to 3 months or from starting point to 3 months. But there was also a pretty big decrease from 3 months to 6 months, which resulted in, what was the total number?
Yeah, it was around 13 pounds different between those groups, which, I mean, you know, so that's a great place to be. If you go like, okay, 3 months or 6 months from now, I could be, you know, 13 pounds down from where I am. Like, Like that's really cool. If I could hang my hat on that, if I could rely on that, you know, what would be nice is if I didn't have to wait 6 months to take off 13 pounds, that would be even more motivating, right? Like, you know, you don't want it all to just vanish overnight. That can have its own, like its own issues. But if we can do it a little bit faster consistently, and we can put some of the superpowers, combine them, like a little bit of, you know, deliberate low carb nutritious eating with a little bit longer and more consistently, you know, hitting my fasting timers. Okay. Right. Now I'm able to go like, okay, I can see myself doing some things week to week here without getting so frustrated with the process, right? Like that's so common with the yo-yo dieting.
Just like the shout out you gave to the 5-star reviewer, right? Like you're starting the process. And you're doing it. You're doing it in real time. It's like my kid riding a bike. You're doing it. Don't look down.
You're doing it. You're doing it.
No, don't look down. Oh, wait. I just said don't look down. What do they do?
I said don't look down. Okay.
My fault. Yep. Bad parenting. Learn from our mistakes, right? So another one of the exploratory outcomes that I thought was really cool too, if we're talking about long-term health metrics or moving the needle, prevention, never ending up having to have that conversation with the doc or the loved one. 6-month decreases in fasting insulin, huge. Homeostasis model assessment of insulin resistance, which is the gold standard, the HOMA-IR. And if you're wondering what that is, search our podcast episodes. We have an episode on that, give you the equation and everything. Mm-hmm. And waist circumference, we have a resource on that as well with our insulin resistant assessment on our resources tab on our website. Waist circumference and waist to height ratio is a huge indicator of cardiometabolic issues. The decreases were significantly greater in the intervention group than the usual diet group. So never mind A1C, but fasting insulin upstream, HOMA-IR upstream, and then waist circumference and height to waist ratio, which is something that some people don't realize is actually a better way to measure progress.
I shied away from that one for a long time.
Right. You know, minimal changes in blood pressure, HDL, LDL, there were decreases and some variability in those, but this didn't include fasting. Right. The fasting studies clearly show that those things will change and come down. So if you're looking at low carb and you've done it before, maybe it's time to look at it in a different light. Mm. Doing the low carb for now. Let's get the movement. Let's get the scale moving. Let's get the blood sugar variability. Right. They had mentioned that the majority of time in the low carb group was spent between 70 and 120, which is the normal range for non-diabetics.
Yeah.
We want less volatile swings in our blood sugar because that's where we get out of whack and adipose storage and insulin can't get down or it's elevated for too long and cravings and mood swings and fatigue and insert the laundry list of stuff we feel on a daily basis when it's like, man, I just want to feel better, but you just get stuck. So really cool study.
It's that concentration of sugar in the blood that ends up, you know, ticking up the A1C because it's getting pushed onto those hemoglobin molecules. So the more time we can spend in that healthier range, then the more time it has to actually get burned off, to dissipate and not just stick on and then get circulated all throughout. So I really love the encouragement and the empowerment that's you know, sitting right here in front of us. We can put these methods together and we can actually like start, you know, moving the needle in a very cool way.
Yeah, and they found those you know, the significantly lower 24-hour glucose and higher percentage of the time between the normal range of 70 to 120. We don't want blood sugars in the 90s. That's pre-diabetes. Yeah. We want blood sugars in the 70s and 80s and feeling good, right? You've got a buffer. Yeah. Okay? Just like the intervention group had that decrease, bringing them down through the pre-diabetes range, nearing in on that non-diabetic range, right? Which is what we want. The CGM is more of an advanced tool, right? It's something that you would use blood sugar that we had mentioned with the first study, how diabetics need to look at their numbers and know what their numbers are, right? So just a really cool contrast of, we need a little bit more fasting, but hey, look what we can do with a dietary intervention. And then imagine if we combine the two together. So Tommy, if the folks are looking for a takeaway from today, and I didn't realize the shout out was going to happen, but I mean, go grab the blueprint, go download it. Look at the sample weeks and we show you how to ramp up and the tips and tricks and the things. And there's some perspective in there as well on what a successful fasting lifestyle should look like. And we're just super excited to deliver that resource to you. It's free resource. Go grab it. Tommy, final thoughts as we wrap up today's episode. I'm going to encourage you all to go to the show notes, click the link, and just, you can do it. Like You can do it. You just got to start somewhere.
Yeah, you got to start somewhere, and it doesn't start working until you take the action. So information is good, but we got to apply the information.
Yeah, just don't download it and keep it in your spam folder.
And don't just hear the message and go, that's a bunch of good stuff, and then turn it off, out of sight, out of mind, right? So go take your first action today. Go like a hit start on your fasting timer if it's not already set, or if it is already set, good for you. Pat yourself on the back. And then think about your next nutrition opportunity. What are you going to break your fast with? Is it something that's serving your long-term goals? Or is it something more on the, I've been looking forward to it, fear of missing out, craving kind of side? Take a look, have a minute of perspective, and make a decision that feels good for you and your long-term goals, and then keep doing what's working.
That's awesome. Head to the show notes, click the link, go get that blueprint. We're excited for you. I know we can be a little cheeky with it sometimes, right? But we like to have fun along the way. We need to have fun in this process.
Yes.
So we can break that cycle of that dieting, just that dieting mindset. We want to get off the struggle bus. We want you to get on to the fasting for life blueprint. That's what we want. We want you guys to be able to take this. The rocket. Oh, I like that. Launch it, right? The rocket ship. Fasting is so powerful. We're encouraging you to take that first step or get back on track today too. Tommy, as always, thank you for the conversation. And we'll talk soon.
Thank you. Bye.
So you've heard today's episode and you may be wondering, where do I start? Head on over to thefastingforlife.com and sign up for our newsletter, where you'll receive fasting tips and strategies to maximize results and fit fasting into your day-to-day life.
While you're there, download your free Fast Start guide to get started today. Don't forget to subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Make sure to leave us a 5-star review, and we'll be back next week with another episode of Fasting for Life.